Over the course of the past month, Argentina has experienced severe economic and political turmoil. In this report, we will attempt to explain these events by outlining the country's political history leading up to the present. We will then hear news and reports and analysis of Argentina's current situation as it continues to unfold. Although the information compiled here merely scratches the surface of these events, we hope it will enable more people to better understand these important events.
The roots of the current Argentine crisis can be traced back to 1967, when all the countries in the hemisphere were headed for a recession. The post-World War II boom was over, and a global slowdown had begun. From 1967 to 1975, the U.S. economic growth rate dropped by more than half, from 4.7% in 1965 to 2.1% in 1975. The Latin American expression, "When the U.S. gets a cold, we get the flu," proved true here once again. Economies all over the hemisphere suffered as a result of this slowdown, including Argentina. This economic slump led to an end of capitalist expansion in Latin America and the exhaustion of old patterns of development. These changes exacerbated already existing political tensions as faltering economies failed to meet their material needs.
In 1973, progressive Peronista Hector Campora was elected president after popular insurrections forced the military government and General LaRouche to relinquish power. The Peronista Party is a disparate political force based largely on the cult of personality bequeathed by Juan Perón, its populist founder. As such, it has little ideology other than the achievement and maintenance of power. It houses everyone from left-wing nationalists to right-wing free marketers under its auspices. With the return from exile of the now aged and more conservative former leader Juan Perón, the more progressive aspects of Campora's anti-imperialist and democratic program were eliminated. Perón's death in 1974 left the government in the hands of his widow. Under rightist and military tutelage, she declared a state of siege in November 1974, and the paramilitary death squads, financed in part by funds from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, swung into action. The main targets were the militant sectors of the trade union movement and the left.
Popular mobilizations against both the repression and the IMF economic austerity measures culminated in a series of two general strikes in 1975 and 1976. Government ministers were ousted, and 20,000 government troops were engaged to control the populace in the northwest. Finally, the armed forces moved to take direct political control in March 1976. A military junta, led by Army Commander Lieutenant General Jorge Rafael Videla, seized power and imposed martial law. The 1976 coup in Argentina was called the Coup for Foreign Credit due to the role the IMF played in bringing the military to power. 3 weeks before the coup, the economic minister, in order to obtain a credit to prevent Argentina from defaulting on its foreign debt payments, ordered drastic austerity measures. The cost of living rose 355% while strikes and demonstrations were constant. While freezing wages, he raised the prices by over 100% for basic items. A general strike put an end to the plan, and the IMF denied the credit. After the coup, the credit was granted.
The military began what was named the Dirty War to restore order and eradicate its opponents. The Argentine Commission on Human Rights in Geneva has charged the junta with 2,300 political murders, over 10,000 political arrests, and the disappearances of 20,000 to 30,000 people. While violence declined, the economy remained in chaos. After a series of volatile changes in military leadership, Lieutenant General Leopoldo Galtieri was put in power in March 1981. Two of the most notorious dictators from this period, Roberto Viola and Leopoldo Galtieri, were School of the Americas graduates. The School of the Americas, renamed in 2001 the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, is a combat training school for Latin American soldiers located at Fort Benning, Georgia.
In April of 1982, Galtieri invaded the British-held Falkland Islands in a move that was seen as an attempt to increase his popularity. However, Great Britain decisively won, and Galtieri resigned in disgrace 3 days after Argentina's surrender. Major General Rinaldo Mignone took over June 14th amid increasing pro-democratic public sentiment. Inflation hit 900%, and Argentina's crippling foreign debt reached unprecedented levels. Elections were now slated for October of 1983. In these elections, Raúl Alfonsín, leader of the Radical Civic Union Party, handed the Peronists its first defeat since its founding. However, Alfonsín failed to curb growing unemployment, high food prices, and quadruple-digit inflation. The Peronists took control again in 1989, and Argentina's new president, Carlos Menem, offered hope to the working people. However, Argentina soon realized that his populist image was a facade. Once in power, he quickly became an ardent supporter of free market liberalization. Taking over an economy with four-digit inflation, he embarked on a shock reform program he described as surgery without anesthesia, selling off state enterprises, throwing open the economy, and pegging the worthless currency to the dollar under a rigid currency board.
The currency board was designed to bring hyperinflation under control and to restore the government's credibility for carrying out sound monetary policy. In the long run, this move failed for a number of reasons. First, pegging the peso to the dollar meant that when the U.S. Federal Reserve raised interest rates, Argentina was forced to as well. However, when the U.S. was booming in the 90s, Argentina was in a slump. The U.S. Federal Reserve raised the rates, and Argentina sank deeper into recession and into debt. This, combined with the devaluation of the Brazilian real in 1999, made Argentina's exports less competitive than its neighbors. Also, direct investment in Argentina was diminished amidst fears that investors would see a repeat of the Russian and Asian crises that occurred in the late 1990s. Finally, the subsequent slowing of the Argentine economy caused prices to begin falling. This deflation contributed to a further appreciation of the Argentinian peso's real exchange rate, making exports even more costly to foreigners.
The IMF stepped in again to bail out Argentina's sinking ship, propping up its now overvalued currency with greater and greater loans. In order to ensure that these loans would be repaid, Argentina's finance ministers, together with the IMF, imposed further austerity measures. One of the most recent round changes began in September of 2000. It included dropping the salaries of the government's emergency employment program by 20%, cutting the salaries of civil servants by 15%, cutting the pensions of government workers, privatizing public services, and using tax revenue earmarked for education and social service to pay off the IMF. Argentina agreed to all this, even while it was in the midst of a recession, all on the promise of more foreign aid from the bank. In late 2001, unemployment was running close to 20%, and 15 million people were below the poverty line. Even so, President De La Rúa continued with further austerity measures. He limited withdrawals to $1,000 per month and imposed further cuts in public spending. With more and more of the middle class below the poverty line and unable to get the remaining savings, people took to the streets. The looting and protests that began in late December forced the resignation of President De La Rúa and the finance minister, Domingo Cavallo. And finally, before the new year, the interim president, Adolfo Rodríguez Saá, resigned after 7 days in office. The country is now in serious political, social, and economic unrest. At least 30 people have died. Police brutality is rampant, and now the $132 billion debt cannot be repaid. Thanks to the mistakes made by the International Monetary Fund economists and Argentina's economic elites, the working people of that country have risen up and said no to their own impoverishment.
Here we will listen to a few of the recent reports on the crisis in Argentina. We will start with an excerpt from Free Speech Radio News from December 20th, 2001.
In a speech broadcast on national television, Argentine President Fernando de la Rúa invited opposition Peronists to join what he called a government of national unity, while a state of siege in the streets continued. De la Rúa sent riot police into the streets of the capital, cracking down on hundreds of anti-government demonstrators with tear gas, water cannons, and repeated charges by police on horseback. Riot officers swung truncheons and fired round after round of tear gas into the crowds. Water cannons roared across the Plaza de Mayo, directing their jets against scrambling demonstrators, who then counterattacked. At least 16 people have died in 2 days of violence sparked by the government's failure to turn around a plummeting economy on the brink of collapse. Independent Media Center reporter Annalie Trevin is in the streets of Buenos Aires, where she spoke with Free Speech Radio News about the crisis.
Right now, I'm on the 9 de Julio Avenue. There are some left-wing organizations demonstrating there. Right now, also at the moment, there are hundreds of people in Plaza de Mayo, where the police have been repressing all day today and all night because they spontaneously began to gather there at midnight after the president de la Rúa confirmed that there was a state of siege for 30 days. Well, there's a lot of tear gas in the air right now, but tens of thousands of people have been demonstrating since midnight, and right now they've just announced that they're going to form a government of national unity with the Peronists, which hasn't been formed yet, so everything is very volatile right now. This government, since it took office in 1999, at the end of 1999, a lot of people had a lot of hopes that this government would change the economic policy, the neoliberal policy of the previous government, which was Menem. And while they inherited the crises, the unemployment and the economic crisis that started in 1998, all of the measures that they've taken while they were in office were systematic attacks on workers' salaries, and they've only added to an increase in unemployment. When this government took office, it was 14% unemployment, and now it's over 20%. And if you add that to the sub-employment, it's 40%. And so while this government has been reducing salaries, it has been cutting funds for social aid, and while that has led to the situation that we have now, it's also been reducing retired people's pensions. With a zero deficit policy, it established that the government can't pay workers and public employees or retired people any money that it doesn't collect from taxes. And well, since we've been suffering a recession for about 4 years now, they collect less taxes each time. The priority of the government is to pay the interest of the national debt, which is already more than $132 billion. The debt is actually, you'd have to go back to the dictatorship in 1976 to explain how the debt got so enormous, because in 1976, during the dictatorship, Cavallo, which was the Minister of Economy until a few hours ago, was in the central bank, and he decided upon the nationalization of the debt of certain businesses that were going bankrupt. So he nationalized that debt, and it quadrupled. The Argentina's debt quadrupled during the dictatorship, and so they've had that problem ever since. All it has done since then has been to grow.
Independent Media Center journalist Annalie Trevin speaking with us from Buenos Aires, Argentina. Jorge is a regular Argentine who would rather his name not be used. We spoke to him from his home in Buenos Aires.
Well, the things are getting worse, and the fact is that people don't see from the government the change of direction, and the policies are the same, and basically the people lost hope that anything would come from the government to really solve the situation, because the broad policies continue being the same, which are just satisfying mainly the requests of the international creditors.
So people are basically losing hope.
Yes, they are, but the fact that they are doing this activity right now, and they are meeting in the center square, and they are asking concrete steps and concrete changes, that means that they have some hope, but not necessarily with the actual government structure.
Jorge is a regular Argentine who would rather his name not be used. We spoke to him from his home in Buenos Aires.
Next, we will hear Amy Goodman's report for Democracy Now!, recorded on December 21st. She discusses the events of late December with economist Alan Sibbles in Buenos Aires.
Argentine President Fernando de la Rúa resigned yesterday as tens of thousands of Argentines took to the streets and defied a state of siege he declared less than 24 hours earlier when protests and food riots swept the recession-ravaged country. More than 20 people were killed, many by police, during several days of protests prompted by government-imposed austerity measures that have devastated the poor and middle class in a country already ravaged by 4 years of recession. Argentina's government began unraveling just 4 days ago when desperate residents in poor neighborhoods of Buenos Aires began protesting and breaking into grocery stores for food. By Wednesday, protests had spread around the country, prompting the declaration of a state of siege and the resignation on Thursday of the despised economics minister, and then the entire cabinet. Argentina has been in a deep recession for more than 4 years, with the government struggling to find ways to pay off a $132 billion debt. In recent months, the IMF has ordered harsh austerity measures as a condition for more than $40 billion in aid to prop up the country's currency, measures which critics say only worsened Argentina's economic crisis. We go now to Buenos Aires, to Alan Sibbles, who is an economist living there and an expert on Argentina's economic crisis. He's been in the streets during the protests of the last few days. Welcome to the War and Peace Report.
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. And if you can speak up as loud as possible.
Okay.
We have reports now that more than 20 people have been killed in the streets. Can you talk about what's happening there?
Yes, the latest number, the latest number this morning was 26. I just saw that one of the people who was wounded also died, so the toll is at 27. I guess the street protests, there's probably two components to it. One of them is the rioting and the food store looting, which you alluded to earlier, which started, as you said, on Tuesday. I think desperate residents of very poor neighborhoods around the country started to go for the large supermarkets and take everything that was in them, and then they moved on to sort of smaller stores doing the same. Unfortunately, this got a lot of play in the media, I think, in the U.S. and to some extent here also, is that parallel to this looting, there was some sort of more, maybe, if you will, opportunistic looting that went on as well. And then so that's what was given attention, and people started thinking, okay, this is just a bunch of opportunists. And I think that's mistaken. I mean, there really is widespread hunger in substantial segments of Argentina's population. The second sort of component to the street protests started on Wednesday night, when the president gave a televised message at about a quarter to 11 at night, referring to the situation in the country and implementing a state of siege, which is a suspension of constitutional rights, and basically making a lot more emphasis on the opportunistic looting, on the violence, and practically not alluding to the desperate situation of millions of Argentines. So people totally spontaneously, there was no complication to this, there was no political party organizing it, poured out into the streets, basically banging pots and pans and just marching down the streets in large groups or in small groups and tending to congregate in three main areas of the city, in the Plaza de Mayo, which is opposite to the executive office or the Pink House, in the plaza that's in front of Congress, and in front of the house of the finance minister in a fairly posh neighborhood of the city, where also thousands of people gathered. And the cry was basically enough of this economic program, enough of neoliberalism, if you will, enough of Domingo Cavallo, the finance minister. He has to go. The president has to go. But it was also the anger was widespread at the entire political class. It's like people are fed up of politicians here. But it was very clear that people were protesting against these economic measures and the never-ending structural adjustments that have been applied in Argentina, really starting in 76, but the latest sort of episode of this started in 91, and De La Rúa, up to yesterday president, basically did one adjustment after another one, and people said, enough.
What do the structural adjustment, what does the structural adjustment program look like? What exactly happens? How many people are laid off? What is the price of food?
Well, the structural adjustment has focused since probably in the most recent episode in reduction of state spending. The IMF has identified as Argentina's main problem its fiscal deficit, which is sort of a constant. They have not been able to balance the budget, and so they have constantly demanded a reduction in government spending. The problem is, as any sort of introductory macroeconomics class will teach you, that in when you're in the middle of a profound recession like Argentina has been for 4 years, you don't go about cutting government spending. You tend to spend your way out of a recession. And so these structural adjustments that have been applied time and time again have essentially made the recession worse. And so Argentina has been in a downward spiral of sort of increasing unemployment, lower economic activity, lower government revenue, larger deficit, adjustment, and so on and so forth. And it seems kind of basic, and even to the average person on the street, and yet that is what has been done in this country for the last 2 years, really more than that. But since De La Rúa came to power, he basically had no economic program other than to slavishly follow the IMF's and the international creditors' demands in the hope that someday their expectations would change and money would begin to flow back into the country from abroad.
Who benefits from the structural adjustment program that's been imposed on the country?
Well, I think that's the key question, because when it's so obvious that it's recessionary, it's so obvious that unemployment is going to go up, it's so obvious that more people are going to be thrown out of the sort of out of the economic system, if you will, one has to ask who it is that benefits. And it's pretty clear that the people who have benefited the most from all of these measures and from the entire, really, IMF, World Bank, directed structural adjustment program that started in 1991 have been the sort of large business conglomerates in Argentina. The financial sector have made out like bandits, and sort of international, some of the large international businesses operating in the country as well. They are the ones who have really not cared about their social situation. They want the peso to continue to be pegged to the dollar on a one-to-one basis. They are the ones who do not want a devaluation and who do not want any change to the current regime, because it has been very highly profitable to them. And the fact that these policies have continued to be implemented in the country makes you believe that they are really the power behind the throne. There's really no other sensible explanation to this.
We're talking to Alan Sibbles, who's an economist living in Buenos Aires, an expert on Argentina's economic crisis, also been in the streets the last few days. 27 people have been killed by police in the protests, and now the Argentine president has resigned. The Argentina economic model has been seen as a good example in the past of how the IMF structural adjustment programs work. That's internationally. Here in this country, Enron in the past has been seen as a poster child of successful corporations, and we've seen it go down. And recently, Paul Krugman wrote a piece in the San Francisco Chronicle. It says, last week, the website satirewire.com ran a mock news story. Enron admits it's really Argentina. It was pretty funny, though quite unfair. Unfair, that is, to Argentina. Yet the satire was more on point than its authors realized. Not long ago, Argentina, like Enron, was a darling of the financial community. And like Enron, Argentina was held up as a role model to a large extent by the same people. Argentina's monetary system in particular, lauded in the pages of Forbes and the Wall Street Journal and feted at libertarian think tanks. Why did the same people tend to admire Enron and Argentina? And it goes on to say, because in their different ways, both the company and the country tried to turn back the clock to 1913. Can you talk about these comparisons?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to it. Argentina has the sort of monetary system in Argentina that was implemented by the minister who came in as a savior and went down in flames, Domingo Cavallo. It was implemented by him in 91. Basically resulted, whereas initially it did work to curb Argentina's hyperinflation and very high inflation rates, it eventually did work very much in the favor of the international financial institutions and large international investors, in that in order to keep the money coming, which was essentially the model that replaced the economic model that replaced the old one, in order to keep the foreign capital coming, real domestic interest rates continue to be very high. And because the parity to the dollar was guaranteed, if you're a foreign investor, they brought massive amounts of money in here, and getting 30% or higher return rates, you can sort of imagine what it was. So, of course, it was the darling of Wall Street and sort of conservative think tanks and everybody else, because they made a killing. What were the effects domestically? Well, I mean, you saw it in the streets yesterday. You saw it in the looting. You see it in the almost 20% unemployment rate, according to official statistics. You see it in the 15% underemployment rate. People have been basically en masse ejected from the economic system and are having a very hard time making sort of subsisting in these conditions.
Finally, what do you see is going to happen next, Al?
It's very confusing. The situation is quite confusing right now because the opposition, the main opposition party, the Peronists, are very splintered, and there's several, three or four or maybe more candidates vying for the sort of nomination of the party or would like to be president. And so this caught them in a state of total disarray. And Peronists have historically had sort of a wide variety of ideological positions. You really have from pretty far to the right to, you know, progressive or somewhat left candidates in there. So it's not really entirely clear what's going to happen. Right now, the majority leader of the Senate, who's a Peronist, is going to be the president for 48 hours, while the Congress, constituted as a legislative assembly, will vote as to what are the next steps to follow. If they're going to call for elections, which some are saying might happen within the next 60 days, or if they're going to nominate somebody to fill out De La Rúa's term, which nobody really wants to do because the economic chaos that would probably follow from whatever economic measures are implemented, nobody wants to be saddled with that responsibility. And it's also not clear what they're going to do economically. There's no one economic program that is being discussed as the obvious alternative, even though a devaluation of the peso is almost universally sort of taken.
Do you expect the protests to continue in the streets?
The protests have pretty much died down right now, and I think people, in a way, are feel that they have obtained what they wanted, which is that these guys get out of office. I think they're also a bit in shock at the brutality, really, of the police repression yesterday, and saddened by the unnecessary deaths. But I think that if politicians think that they can go on doing business as usual, and, you know, we get back into the old sort of mode, I think that it's very likely that we'll see people in the streets again down the road. But at this
Alan Sibbles, I want to thank you very much for being with us, economist living in Buenos Aires, expert on Argentina's economic crisis, also in the streets during the protests over the last few days. The president has resigned of Argentina, and 27 people are dead.
What follows is the reading of an Argentina Indymedia first-person account of the spontaneous mobilization that occurred in Buenos Aires over the midnight hours of December 28th and into the early morning of the 29th, 2001. To preserve the authenticity of the report, only minor verb tense changes were made. For a text version of this report, check out argentina.indymedia.org or stay tuned to this radio station for more info.
A hurried report while we continue to breathe tear gas. What time is it? It's 2:15 a.m. We looked at each other and we understood that we had to remember this time for the rest of our lives. We were standing in the gates of the government house, an ornate pink palace also known as the Casa Rosada, a symbol of Argentinian power. Never in the past had a mobilization gotten there, in this way. Where to start if not there? How to sort all the mixed emotions, so many images, so many events? We ask for apologies for this report, written with the acid taste of the gases still in our noses. We hope to be able to sort all that we lived this day.
While it was 11 in the evening, we were walking on San Juan Ave and Baudet. We could hear some pots being beaten against the balconies. Behind, we had left a building with people looking down, making noise. The cars went by, honking their horns, and in front, a couple of blocks, you could see families that blocked just a piece of the avenue. We continued walking until a friendly car took us to the Congress, the place where people were auto-converging. Auto-converging. It means that nobody called for the demonstration. Groups of neighbors had organized a cacerolazo, the beating of house pots, in Almagro, and maybe in some other neighborhoods, but no one had called to march toward the Congress.
Now we were there, and we were thousands. Again the pots, the steps filled with people, complete families protesting and making noise. What did they want? That Grosso leave the government? The resignation of the Supreme Court? That they give back the deposits? But also more than this. The motto, that everyone left, that no one remained, is still everyone's favorite. It was the one most cheered, again today, with the new government. It's not about one or another dark figure in the halls of power. It's about a click of something that broke very deep inside and is not going to be cured with one or two resignations, or with an election. The rumor began to spread and later became a cheer. The people are going to the Plaza de Mayo, and nobody's going to take us out. A spontaneous column of thousands that gets lost on Mayo Ave goes decisively forward. In front, an Argentinian flag, and in every step we take, we seem to be more. We race in front to see it get there, and again we prove that we are more. Thousands and thousands entering the Plaza de Mayo. And people continue to get there. And the mothers get there, those being the mothers of the disappeared during the last military dictatorship from 1976 to 1982. And the motocueros, the people on motorcycles, get there. They are given an ovation in memory of the last protests, where they played a heroic role and some lost their lives. The fallen had their tribute, the best one they could have.
First, a photographer spoke. Then a grandmother... Then a grandfather said he wanted to enter by force to talk with the president. Later, the youth. 5 minutes later, at 2:15 a.m. exactly, it was all of us. The barrier gave in immediately, and the police had to move to the side. There we were, at the gates of the Casa Rosada, that from now on has nothing sacred about it. We entered the gates, in the hall, before going inside, singing what everyone wanted, for everyone to leave, that no one remained. We saw faces with emotion, surprised faces, curious people that looked from behind and that went forward just to touch it, feel it theirs. People were angry. The news that Grosso had resigned went by like lightning, but it only helped to raise the spirit. Many wanted to repeat the same of last week, that everyone left, that no one remained. From Moyano to the radicals, going through Menem and Rodriguez Sa, everyone was a protagonist of the songs. Without Peronist, without radicals, we're going to live better, was the tune of one song.
And now, the question was answered once again by the police. They did it in such a fashion that will later serve them to present it as an act of personal defense. They sent two cops to dissuade the whole multitude. Obviously, the crowd didn't receive them too well. And after they had not been dissuaded, the tear gas and rubber bullets began. The two policemen, fat and big, were the sacrifice of the law enforcement to start the repression. With the first gases, the mass of people began to run through Diagonal Norte and through Avenida de Mayo. An important group remained in Plaza de Mayo, and another one of thousands on Avenida de Mayo. The great majority of the people went towards the Congress. We stop here to emphasize the following. The mobilization divided into three parts, maybe four parts, and still it remained big. The Plaza de Mayo crowd holds while Avenida de Mayo barricades are put up. Some let their anger out on the banks, signs, and bus stops. From the balcony of a rich hotel, men in tuxedos look down on the scene and make gestures. A youth starts screaming at them, "Bourgeois sons of bitches!" And the gestures multiply. A small anecdote. A bottle of cider is thrown with good aim and hits one of them in the mouth opportunely.
In the Plaza de Mayo, the situation is becoming more tense. The majority of the people are going towards Congress, and everyone decides to go there. In the Congress, there's a show of bonfires on the steps. We don't remember to ask for the time. The more decisive enter and begin to pull things out to feed the bonfire, until the entrance of the Congress becomes one. They say that inside, deep inside, there's also people taking stuff out. They take out a bust, and someone screams not to throw it. The people struggle over it until one takes it and ceremoniously throws it in the fire. The infantry, minutes before, had been overflowed. Then once again the gases begin, just as the bust went down. Now there are more, and it appears that the water tank is coming. People retreat, while a strong group of people resist. They leave through Callao, a bit running, but immediately walking. It brings pleasure to the cops when they make you run. They feel bigger. It disorganizes us. The scream not to run is generalized. Now everyone recovers, and some scream, "To the tribunals, to the tribunals." They want to go for the Supreme Court justice, the same place 2 years back in an agreement with the Peronists and the Radicals. No one runs now. We make bonfires, little barricades. Others show no mercy towards the banks.
The police advanced toward us again. The air became unbreathable, and in 1 second they appeared from every direction. We turned. We had no other way. We went through dark streets, and in every corner, in every single one of them, trucks appeared. Tear gas and civilian cars appeared with rubber bullets. It's an ambush. We get out however we can. There's no possibility of refuge, and it's hard to organize resistance. All of us, every single one, throws anything they can to obstruct the police way. We turned, and once again the ambush. A small group of us remain, trapped in one block. Cars made way for us and took us out. Through the streets where people are still running, the police operation goes 6 or 7 blocks around. At this time, they seem without end.
We get out finally. The sun begins to come up, and the phones begin to ring to see how everyone is doing. Until now, the news reports 3 detained, but a half hour from the end, everything is hard to tell. It seems like history doesn't give you a breath. Let's not give it one. This report was read by Free Radio Burlington for the Independent Media Center in Argentina. For more information, check out argentina.indymedia.org.
Finally, we will hear just one of the many reports on Argentina filed by the BBC World News. This was recorded on December 31st, soon after the resignation of interim president Rodríguez Saá.
After his predecessor, Fernando de la Rúa, was forced out of office following days of violent riots over his administration's handling of the economy. The unenviable job of taking the reins in Argentina for the time being falls to the head of the lower house of Congress, Eduardo Camaño. He'll hold the post for the next 48 hours while Congress meets to decide on what steps to take next. Daniel Schweimler reports from Buenos Aires.
The headline on one front page reads simply, "President Wanted," over a photograph of an empty presidential chair. After today's in power, Adolfo Rodríguez Saá resigned, saying he didn't have the support of his own party. A few moments later, the leader of the Senate and the man who, according to the Constitution, should replace him, Ramon Puerta, announced that he too would resign. The Legislative Assembly will meet on Tuesday to accept the resignations and to choose a new leader. By the time they sit, the Peronist Party should have decided who will take on the seemingly impossible task of lifting Argentina out of its economic, social and political crisis. The Assembly must also decide whether the new leader will govern until elections called for March the 3rd or will finish the term started by President Fernando de la Rúa and hold office until the end of 2003. There appears to be no agreement on this or any other issue. Among the names being mentioned as possible future leaders are two strongmen from the Peronist Party, the governor of Buenos Aires province, Carlos Rucalf, and the senator from the same province, Eduardo Duhalde. In the growing uncertainty and confusion, the Argentine people will also have their say, as is becoming the custom, out on the streets in noisy protest, bashing pots and pans.
Daniel Schwamler in Buenos Aires. You're listening to the BBC in London.
This report on Argentina was put together by members of the Free Radio Burlington Collective. Audio clips included here were produced by Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, BBC World Channel, the Argentina Indie Media Center, and Free Radio Burlington. We would like to thank Free Speech Radio News and Democracy Now! For their excellent news coverage. We would also like to encourage listeners to donate to Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, and especially to the Argentina Independent Media Center. Please visit www.indymedia.org. for details on how to donate. Background for the introduction to this report was compiled from reports by Greg Pallast for the London Observer, Mark Weisbot for Knight Ridder, Simon Jeffrey for The Guardian, the North American Congress on Latin America's Report on the Americas, and the Financial Times. Special thanks to Professor Paul Poast from Ohio State University for his insights on Argentina's currency problem. For more information, please visit ZNet's special report on Argentina at www.zmag.org. The Guardian special report on Argentina at guardian.co.uk and www.indymedia.org. The Free Radio Burlington Collective welcomes your comments and questions. Email us at freeradioburl, that's freeradioburl@yahoo.com.